Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm Jace.
And I'm Nick.
And this is another New Comics Wednesday episode. So we're going to be talking about a few of the books that come out tomorrow in depth. And then we'll mention a few other titles that we haven't had a chance to read yet that we think you should be on the lookout for. But before we dive into all that, I wanted to talk about comic, quote-unquote, journalism. In general, and some news tidbits in particular. So, you know, you guys have heard me talk about comics journalism before, and it is comics journalism even really a thing? You know, you talk about that word journalism, reporting the news and being objective and just presenting the facts. And maybe at one point, comic coverage and some of the sites that you could find online and such were that. They were objective and they were just kind of reporting the news. It's kind of gotten away from that now. You know, a lot of the sites that used to be really big, like CBR, Comic Book Resources, comicbook.com, even to a lesser extent, The Beat, Comics Beat, they used to be really objective and they didn't have any particular ties to one publisher or another, and it's just not that way anymore. You know, comicbook.com recently got bought by CBS. There's a big media conglomerate that owns CBR now. The Beat, I can't remember. They have some partnership with some publisher or another now. Boom, maybe? I don't know. That doesn't sound right. But anyway, be that as it may, it just doesn't seem like there's really a spot out there to get objective comic news. And to be honest, I don't know that there really needs to be, which is kind of sad for me. I mean, I know there are a lot of comic fans out there still, but it's nowhere near what it used to be, right? So somebody like me who's been a comic book fan for a long time, the books have skewed older. You know, Jason Inman and I were talking about this the other day on the podcast. You'll hear Brian Hill and I talk about this on tomorrow's episode of Top Cow Thursday. And it's like comics have skewed older, so there's not as many, and they kind of had to survive, because there's not as many young people reading comics. There's not as many young people reading in general. There's such a competition for entertainment attention these days. And so comics have done what they needed to do. But unfortunately, it's a bit short-sighted when you think about it. They keep expecting a smaller and smaller audience to spend more and more money. You know, that's what the variant cover thing is all about. They're trying to squeeze more money out of those hardcore fans rather than trying to reach new readers. I mean, I know they're trying, but it seems to be diminishing returns as opposed to the way things used to be. And as far as a website that needs to exist and, you know, people that work for the website need to be paid. And, you know, it's like the website has to generate revenue. And in order to generate revenue, you need people willing to advertise on the site. And to get people to pay for the advertising, you need traffic. And if there's not a lot of people reading comics and desiring comic news, if there's not a demand for comic news, you know, the law of supply and demand says if there's no demand, there's not going to be supply. So a lot of the former comic sites are sites that used to particularly cater to comics and cover comics and have a lot of comic book specific news. They switched over to other things that generate more clicks, generate more traffic, and thus generate more ad revenue. So that's the movies and the TV shows. Because nowadays, when people look to comic characters, that's where the majority of the people look, right? They look to get easier forms of entertainment than comics. I'd rather just watch a movie and veg out than actually read something. I'd rather just tune in once a week or binge off my DVR or binge off of Netflix to see these comic TV shows or comic series instead of reading the actual books, right? And maybe some of these people, a lot of these people, would never be comic readers, right? They're happy to enjoy the characters and learn about the characters and discover the characters through movie and film and TV shows. But if you were to ask those same people to be comic readers, like say that the explosion of comic book characters into mainstream media and mainstream pop culture never happened, they would just be watching whatever else was the popular thing. They wouldn't be turning to comics to get those stories, which is kind of too bad because you get a lot more depth out of comics. You get a lot more history. There's a lot more variety in stories. You know, there's some great independent books right now that never have a chance of ever making it on the big screen. Some really great stories. So it's tough, right? So I'm asked all the time, at least on a weekly basis, where do you go to get your comic news, and where can I go? Where should I go? And it's a tough question, right? I mean, I get press releases, so obviously I get some news there. I follow a ton of creators on Twitter, so I get news that way. And I do go to Bleeding Cool. That's like the one site. I mean, they are owned by Avatar Press, but Avatar Press is like really small and they don't really have anything to do with the content that's generated there. But Bleeding Cool, based on the history, doesn't have the best connotation to a lot of people. You know, they're not as bad at publishing rumors as they used to be. They used to publish a lot more rumor with very little to back it up. Nowadays, they'll still post rumors, not as often as they used to, but oftentimes they wait till they have multiple sources that are telling them the same thing, and then they'll go ahead and publish something. But I take everything that I read there with a grain of salt because you never know. They like I said, they do publish some rumor, and who knows if they heard some rumor and by the time it's published and would have happened, then things have changed in the industry and whatever they were particularly talking about doesn't come to pass. So again, you do have to take it with a grain of salt, and there are some creators that absolutely hate the site. They don't like Rich Johnston, who's kind of the main reporter over there, and they just don't have a good relationship, never will. Bleeding Cool's burned a lot of bridges over the years. That being said, the reason I'm talking about this is because Bleeding Cool did publish a bunch of rumors over the weekend about what they're calling DC Fresh Start. And this is part of what I don't like about it, right? Like, they're constantly belittling Marvel and DC for restarting with number ones, and they kind of lump them into the same boat, Marvel and DC. And I call Marvel to task all the time for constantly rebooting or relaunching with number one. They made a big deal about Legacy, Marvel Legacy, that came out last year. Hey, we're going back to Legacy numbering, only to find out, you know, a few months later, now we're going back to the number ones. You know, enough already. You know, DC did relaunch with New 52, and then they did realize it was a mistake. They themselves admitted, hey, we made a mistake. We forgot about a lot of the legacy and the relationships that the characters had. And so that was what Rebirth was, kind of a course correction. They relaunched most titles with Rebirth. And now there's some rumors that there's going to be another relaunch or another fresh start, they're calling it. That's what Bleeding Cool is calling it, right? But I don't know that that's necessarily the case, or if they're necessarily going to start over with number ones. There have been some changes over there, and there's more changes to come. You know, we're 2 years out from Rebirth now, right? So it may be time for some of the creative teams to move around, right? And with what happened in DC Metal, which we haven't really talked about on the show, but maybe we'll do a DC Metal spotlight at some point. But with what happened there, what Scott Snyder did there, it kind of opened up everything for some natural changes on creative teams. And we know Scott Snyder's going to be heading up the kind of the Justice League corner, and there's a lot of new Justice League titles coming out. We heard about that at WonderCon. So Bleeding Cool is calling this DC Fresh Start, late summer, autumn, you know, perfect time. They can spotlight it at San Diego. But again, just because they're doing a new publishing initiative, to me, it's not the same. You can't lump it into Marvel, you know, the same thing Marvel does with constantly starting with number ones. because it's not to say, it's just, okay, we are launching these Justice League titles and we're shifting some creative teams around and we want you to pay attention. This is a good jumping on point. And so why wouldn't you want to market that? I don't necessarily think just because they're bringing new creative teams on some of the titles, and I'm going to talk about those in a second, that all of a sudden you're going to see a bunch of new number ones. I suppose it's possible. I hope that we do not see a bunch of new number ones because nothing's getting thrown out as far as that goes. So, but it's tough. I mean, it's tough. We won't know for sure until it actually happens. But again, it leaves a bad taste in my mouth that Bleeding Cool is talking about this as another one of those relaunches, right? So I don't necessarily have a problem with it. If it is some kind of reset again, then it will bother me more. But for now, it bothers me more that Bleeding Cool is trying to lump it in with the same thing Marvel's doing, constantly trying to fix things and bring readers back. DC's not hurting for readers the way Marvel is. They're putting out some pretty quality stuff right now. So all that being said, on to some of the rumors. A rumor that wasn't a rumor, Matt Fraction, because here's the other thing, right? Like, before I get into the titles, Brian Michael Bendis is now over at DC. We all know that. And he's going to be doing the Man of Steel. We saw his first published work in Action Comics 1000 last week. And so he's got a very big presence. He knows a lot of people in the industry. He lives in Portland. There's a huge comic community in Portland, including this next person I'm going to talk about. And Brian has a lot of friends in the industry. So why wouldn't he, now that he's over there at Marvel, want to try to bring on some of his friends and give them a chance to work on some of these properties and bring some fresh perspective. So the first rumor that's not a rumor, and again, this goes into Bleeding Cool. Okay, so you thought something was going to happen, Bleeding Cool, and then it didn't happen, but you still publish an article on it anyway. And I guess I'm part of the problem because I actually read it. And the title is Matt Fraction, Not on Jimmy Olsen, DC Fresh Stop, rather than Fresh Start. And the article talks about Bendis coming over from Marvel. And the plan was for Matt Fraction, another one of Bendis's Portland comics crowd, and a prominent comics creator in his own right, who's never worked for DC, to write a Jimmy Olsen comic. But for whatever reason, and he doesn't know the details, it didn't work out, and so not so much a fresh start as a fresh stop. So, doesn't mean it won't work out for another title. We'll keep our ear to the Portland ground. So again, it's like, do you really need to put this out as news? So Matt Fraction was going to write a Jimmy Olsen title, but then it fell through. Like, okay, so it's not news. And how far did it actually get? I mean, publishers reach out to creators all the time and say, hey, we're thinking about doing this. We're thinking about doing that. It could have been a single conversation. Oh, Matt Fraction, what would you like to write at DC? Oh, I'd like to write Jimmy Olsen. Okay, let's think about that. They think about it for 2 minutes. Nah, we don't think Jimmy Olsen will sell. Moving on. So, eh. Next up, David F. Walker on a Flash comic. Interesting here to note that it's not the regular Flash comic. Current writer and fellow Portland resident Joshua Williamson still has that. Again, David F. Walker from Portland. Could it possibly be David F. Walker on a Wally West comic? An African-American Wally West comic? Because, David F. Walker is African-American, and a lot of the characters he worked on so far, Shaft, Cyborg, Luke Cage, I don't know. I guess we'll wait and see. But again, another rumor from Bleeding Cool. Liam Sharp to join Grant Morrison on Green Lantern. Okay, if there's ever any of these rumors I don't want to be true, it's Grant Morrison on Green Lantern. I'm very, very sad that Robert Venditti is leaving Green Lantern. We all know that. I loved his run. I think it's an instant classic. I can't think of a writer that would be worse for Green Lantern than Grant Morrison. I know it's sacrilege in some circles to say this, but I cannot stand Grant Morrison. The guy, in my opinion, has only ever written one comic series that is even readable. And that's All-Star Superman. His run on Batman to me is absolute garbage. I can't even read it. It's awful. I don't get what the big deal is. I try not to be negative You know I try not to be negative. But when it comes to Grant Morrison, I just don't get it. I don't understand why some corners of the comic book world just revere this guy. I don't like his stuff. Never have. I just don't get it. And so to have him follow one of the best Lantern runs of all time would be horrible, in my opinion. But so here's one rumor that I really hope is not true. That being said, I'd love to see Liam Sharp on Green Lantern. I feel that would be an interesting take. And I feel like as much as I don't like Grant Morrison's writing, him, the way he writes, his style of storytelling probably suits Liam Sharp really well, because Liam, his stuff's really impactful, a lot of big panels. So I feel like it would suit Morrison's writing style. That being said, I really hope Morrison's not on Green Lantern. Next rumor, Matt Fraction's wife, actually Kelly Sue DeConnick on Aquaman. This has been another really, really good title since DC Rebirth started. Very political. Dan Abnett has been writing it. It's been very good. I haven't read much of Kelly Sue DeConnick's stuff. So this one I'm kind of meh about. I'm sure I'll check it out. Who her creative partner might be on the book, don't know. But that's an interesting one to be sure. And Brian Azzarello on Suicide Squad is another. This one I'm kind of iffy about too, only because the article mentions specifically Brian Azzarello's Joker graphic novel that he did with artist Lee Bermejo, which is a really acquired taste on the Joker, in my opinion. Almost a Joker in the vein of the way... Oh, I'm totally drawing a blank on his name. What's the guy that played Joker in Suicide Squad?
Jared Leto.
Yeah, Jared Leto. Very much a Jared Leto take on the Joker. I'm not a fan of the Joker, regardless of what version it is. I am sick to death of the Joker at this point. If I never read another Joker comic in my life or have to see the character again, I would be happy. So bringing Brian Azzarello onto Suicide Squad has me somewhat interested, but you bring the Joker into, nah, done. I won't read it if it's got the Joker in it. So I guess on that way, it doesn't really matter if Azzarello does the Suicide Squad or not, because as I said, if he brings the Joker in, nah, I'm done. To me, the Joker doesn't work on the Suicide Squad. He's a loner, so you know that doesn't make any sense to me in the first place. And then it's just the fact that I don't remember. You know, I read Batman when I was growing up. I read a lot of Batman. So from, let's say, 1982 until 2000 or so, Joker would show up once in a while. Once in a while. But it seems like since the early 80s and then especially when Scott Snyder took over Batman. I mean, once Snyder took over Batman, it was like the Joker was in every story. Every story, like, ridiculous. Every Batman movie, gotta have the Joker. Yeah, done. I'm done with the Joker. So, if he's in the Suicide Squad, I'm done. I'm curious to know what Azzarello would do with the Suicide Squad. But no, Joker, I'm out. So, those are kind of the rumors. Again, they're completely rumors. Take them all with a grain of salt. Not to put a spotlight on Bleeding Cool, but they do. I mean, one thing you can give credit, Rich Johnson, he's got a lot of contacts. He has a lot of people that feed him this information. And a lot of times they turn out to be true. Like I said, he has multiple sources on some of this stuff, which has me worried in as much as it pertains to Grant Morrison on Green Lantern. The good thing is Morrison's so big now that he doesn't really stay on anything for very long. So if he does come onto Green Lantern, hopefully it'll be over quickly. That's what I'll say. Any comments on any of those rumored creators on any of those titles, Nick?
Not really. I haven't read a lot of those titles in a while. Except for I agree with you on Grant Morrison because I have also read his Batman. and I'm not the biggest fan. And of course, I read his Dead Man last time we talked about that.
No, that was Neil Adams.
Oh, that was Neil Adams.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. I'm not a big Grant Morrison fan, though, either.
I mean, on his Batman, Batman Incorporated and all that. You'd have the one page would be set in the Batcave, right? You're reading, and it's Batman and Robin and Alfred, and they're all talking. They're in the Batcave. You turn the page, and they're in Europe. They're in Europe. They're fighting. There's a Bat Cows there. I'm like, am I missing some pages? Like, it jumps around so much. Yeah, I can't.
I did used to own that book. Yeah, I remember that.
I can't stand it. It's awful. It's awful. Anyway, enough negativity. Let's talk about some books we do like. I guess. You know what? Why don't you go first, Nick? Why don't you talk about your first book on the list?
Okay. And you can certainly help me with this one. I assume you've read it also. It's Cyberforce, number 2.
Yep.
Created by Mark Silvestri, written by Brian Hill, of course, who you've talked with, and Matt Hawkins, and art by Attilo Rojo.
Yep.
Not good with names. Good, good. And when I read it originally, I didn't actually know it was – like, I thought this was a brand new series originally when I read it. And then I researched it later when I was researching Brian Hill. Virgin. And so I guess would you best describe it as like a retelling or a reimagining, like a reboot almost?
Reimagining sounds good. I mean, they're not completely throwing out everything that came before. It does have some ties into some recent titles over at Top Cow, like Aphrodite 9 and Generation 9 and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
Okay. But it's like it's reintroducing us, I guess, to the characters.
Yeah. A modernization.
Okay. Modernization.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in the first issue, we obviously meet Morgan Stryker, who is critically wounded, and his daughter, Karen, makes the decision to have him augmented with technology. And in exchange, she gets a new pair of legs, and Stryker in the first one comments on how, like, now the company owns both of them, which seems to be a heavy theme in this one. And so the second one just kind of continues it. What I really like about the book, actually, this one's interesting compared to most books I read because it's much lighter on any kind of narration or even like dialogue than almost any other book I'm reading currently. So I don't know, it's a lot of just great art is what it seems like. A lot of great action scenes, more than a great deal of story in the second issue with the terrorist from the first one again showing up. And I assume that's an older character also that we meet.
New.
Okay. So it's about her, more or less. Yeah. She gets to meet a character named Killjoy.
Yeah. So take some elements of the original Cyberforce, obviously. You know, the original Cyberforce was all about cybernetics being grafted onto humans and evil corporations and everything. So those are big themes. Those are things that you have to have in order for it to be Cyberforce. But as Nick mentioned, we recently talked to Brian Edward Hill, and that interview will be on tomorrow's podcast for Top Cow Thursday. So I encourage you to tune in to that when we talk a lot more in depth about Cyberforce number 2. We don't specifically get into too many of the story beats or the plot points of issue 2. It's more about the big overall ideas. Brian actually wanted to come on for New Comic Wednesday the day before Cyberforce 1 was going to hit stands, and we just couldn't make the scheduling work out. So we had him on for Top Cow Thursday, which comes out tomorrow, as I said, and he's going to talk about, the big ideas, the themes he wants to explore. It ended up being a really cool conversation, despite the fact that Brian, scared the bejesus out of us talking about cybernetic immortal baby overlords that are going to rule over us at some point in the future. So if that doesn't make you want to listen, I don't know what will. But yeah, I don't want to talk too much more about kind of the big ideas of the book because, I couldn't do it justice the way that Brian can and did. But to Nick's point, yeah, I totally agree with you that the art really tells a story. I mean, Nick, you've recently been reading a lot of old All right, everybody, this is going to seem like a very abrupt shift, because indeed it is super bad news for you guys, and I'm super disappointed, and I apologize. Been doing this long enough that you would think mistakes like this wouldn't happen, but we had some technical difficulties during the recording, and we actually, Nick and I, kept talking about comics that were coming out tomorrow. We each had four titles specifically in a that we were talking about. Nick was on his first one, Cyberforce number 2. He had three other books he was going to talk about. I had four I was going to talk about. We were just about done. Nick was on his last book. I just had one more to go. When I look over, and lo and behold, we aren't recording anymore, and in fact had been recording for about 45 minutes. So yeah, Nick and I were telling you all about these incredible books coming out today. And unfortunately, that conversation and Nick giving me a bad time and me giving Nick a bad time about not knowing how to pronounce creators' names and being a comic book version is lost to the ether, gone forever. So it's late and Nick could no longer stay. He's got to be up super early to go see Avengers Infinity War tomorrow, which, you know, I'm sure a lot of you will consider a noble cause. And it's not possible to replicate everything that was said, and I'm really disappointed. Again, I apologize. It's happened a few times over the years doing this, and, you know, error is human, right? Again, I apologize. I wish you guys could hear what we had to say about the books, but it's not possible. So I am going to quickly mention a couple of titles that were on my list. I'm nowhere near going to go into as much depth as I originally did, just because, as I said, it's really late and I need to get the episode edited and produced and put up, and all that kind of stuff takes time. So the title I will mention is Demon Hell on Earth number 6 by writer Andrew Constant, penciler Brad Walker, inker Andrew Hennessy, and colorist Chris Sotomayor. Incredible book. This number 6 wraps up a 6-issue miniseries, deals with Jason Blood and the demon Etrigan. And based on the story, we kind of get the impression that the demon really hasn't been seen in this version of the DC Universe since Demon Knights, which was a title that launched with the New 52. Jason Blood has kind of taken it upon himself to keep the demon in check all these centuries since then. But now something has happened in Death Valley, which causes Jason to release the demon for the first time in a really, really long time. But what's interesting is they don't switch places like normal, right? Jason Blood is actually able to exist separate from the demon, although they're still tied together. So it's an interesting story. It brings the demon back into the DC universe, maybe with an eye towards some appearances in the new Justice League Dark title that's coming out soon. Another thing that Andrew Constant, the writer, manages to do is kind of explain the demon's different personas, personalities, as he's appeared over the years, sometimes rhyming, sometimes not. And so I appreciated that about the story, as well as kind of the history of the demon. And it's not overt, you know, he's not filling up the pages with dialogue boxes and exposition for us to understand the history of the demon. I hadn't read a lot of demon, you know, appearances here and there, but never read any of the demon titles themselves. And so I had no problem following. And again, I did learn a lot about the history of the demon and kind of this version of the demon. And so I really appreciated that. You don't have to have any kind of foreknowledge of the character to really understand and enjoy this story. And what really shone for me in this story is the art. You know, Brad Walker with his longtime inking collaborator, Andrew Hennessy, they got to draw the demon in a way he hasn't really been portrayed before. He's kind of bigger, larger, almost twice the size he usually is, looked absolutely incredible. And based on what happens in the story, Walker gets to illustrate a lot of hellscapes, and the backgrounds are super detailed. The color work by Chris Sotomayor is second to none. A lot of oranges and reds and bright colors, and a lot of action and monsters, and really a darker side of Brad Walker's art than we've seen before. And I'm a huge fan of Brad Walker, specifically since his run on Green Lantern's New Guardians. And from there, he went to Sinestro, so a couple of really cosmic books. And then from there, Aquaman, which is, you know, very different feel, but still in a way kind of flowing, you know, kind of the freedom of movement that you get in space. It's kind of the same that you get in water. Of course, that being said, that Brad redesigned Aquaman's costume for Rebirth and changed his shirt to where it had all these pebbles rather than scales, and they were irregular, and not realizing when he designed that it was going to take so long to draw that he didn't get to do as many interiors on the title as he would have liked. But he did do a lot of covers, and I really enjoy his work. And one thing that struck me is I think part of the reason I'm drawn to his work, I didn't realize until I saw him do something like this, like get to draw the demon and just a different take, much more kind of grounded take, much more visceral action with the demon and, you know, these Hellspawn fighting each other. His work in a way reminds me of Gil Kane. And I know Brad would be the first one to say, don't compare me to a legendary comic artist like Gil Kane. But, you know, I don't want to sell Brad short. He's an incredible artist who I think more people should know his name, because Gil Kane had a real strength to his art. You know, he used a little bit of a thicker line, thicker than I normally enjoy, and a little thicker than Brad's. But there's something about Gil Kane's art that always stuck with me. He was actually the first artist whose art I could recognize on the page just by looking at it. And I think there's a similarity in the style of storytelling from panel to panel between Gil Kane, and also the angle, the way Brad lays things out within a panel, the angles he chooses are similar to me as Gil Kane, and the facial expressions. Yeah, there's something about Walker's art that reminds me of that. It definitely has that strength. Again, I don't know what exactly it is about this story and the way Brad illustrated that brought that to the forefront and made me realize it. I don't know if Brad himself kind of changed his style a little bit to suit this kind of more of a throwback kind of tale. You know, it's not, you know, futuristic. It's not, you know, like cosmic, like his previous Green Lantern and Sinestro work. And it's not, you know, flowy and kind of earthy, like the Aquaman, you know, where everything was very fluid because it was water and it was Aquaman and such. And this is much more of a strength to the art. And so, yeah, I thought that the detail in the background, that the demon himself was rendered incredibly. I mean, the art, it's amazing. It's so, so good. I was completely blown away. You know, the story by Andrew Constant was compelling. I binged all six issues, you know, issue six is out today as you hear this. And I went back and reread from issue one, and reread, you know, one through five, and then dove into six because I wanted to see how it read all together as one story, as one narrative. It was really, really good. I encourage you to pick up all the issues or the trade when it comes out. And, you know, if only for the art itself. I mean, the art was absolutely incredible. So kudos to the entire creative team, Brad Walker in particular. I just can't say enough about how incredible the artwork is in this this book. It blew me away. And I hope a lot of people check it out because, you know, the Demon is not exactly a household name or one of the more popular characters in the DCU. So I hope that people don't sleep on this and they pick it up and take a look because it's worth picking up just for the art alone. Really, really incredible work by Brad. And I think he's super proud of the work he did on this title. And I know he said that he had a lot of fun doing it. So I'm glad to see. And that may be part of the reason that it came out so well, right? That the enjoyment Brad was getting out of doing these illustrations kind of infected it with this incredible energy. And so, yeah, kudos to the art team and Andrew Constant as well for a great story. Demon Hell is Earth number 6. Do yourself a favor, pick it up. The other title I'm going to talk about, you know, I was giving Nick a bad time because I tell him all the time that we can't talk about the same titles over and over. We have to try to add in some variety. Because if we're talking about Batman, for example, every time a new Batman issue comes out, which is every other week these days, and somebody doesn't like Batman, they're just like, why am I listening? All these guys ever talk about is Batman. I say that to say this. The next title I'm going to talk about is Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps, number 43. big fan of Robert Venditti, obviously, my writer of the year for last year. And this is his final arc on Green Lantern. And for that reason, I felt compelled to talk about it. And not only that, but it's an incredible story that Rob is telling. So I don't know that I'll cover every single issue of the arc. I may, you know, I talked about the first issue of this Dark Stars Rising arc. This is issue 2, and I may wait until the final issue of Rob's arc, the wrap up of Dark Stars Rising, and before I talk about it again. But I wanted to mention it here just because this issue really progresses the story and helps us understand what's going on. So the creative team, as I mentioned, written by Robert Venditti, pencils by Rafa Sandoval, inks by Jordi Tarragona, and colors by Tomeu More. Colors by More, perfect for this book. Bright, cosmic, very energetic. The art by Rafa Sandoval. He's been one of the artists that's been working with Venditti on Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps since Rebirth started. I know Rob loves Rafa's work, and hats off to Rafa for doing an incredible job. Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps is not an easy book to draw. There are so many characters, and Rafa pays attention. He's very consistent. He never phones it in on the backgrounds or takes shortcuts when rendering some of the figures in the background. Very much a craftsman. Love his compositions and his rendering. Great job doing these action scenes with many, many, many characters. In this issue in particular, there's a couple of pages with Hal, and in the background are what looks like thousands and thousands of Dark Star suits of armor. And it's just incredible to look at. So incredible job by Rafa and his inker, Jordi Tarragona. As far as the story itself, we saw last issue that the controllers had created new Dark Star armor. And in attempting to kind of upgrade it, because the controllers are so few, they needed the Dark Star armor they were creating to kind of have an intelligence of its own. And it literally happened, that the armor took on a mind of its own, took on a sentience of its own, almost like a hive mind. And the armor has been going around the universe collecting like-minded people who believe in the final solution for justice. And that's kind of where we see this issue go. What I particularly enjoy about this issue is Venditti gives us the kind of the status quo. He lets us know what's going on with the Dark Stars, what's going on with the controllers, how that relates to the Green Lantern Corps. And he does it in such a way that's enjoyable and well-paced, rather than just being, you know, a bunch of blocks of text or exposition that's boring. A great job by Venditti to help us understand just how much trouble the Green Lantern Corps is in when they're trying to take on the Dark Stars. And the Dark Stars, for their part, are willing to give the Green Lantern Corps a pass as long as the Green Lantern Corps doesn't interfere with their desire to basically kill anyone they feel deserves it. Their, you know, judge, jury, and executioner, as far as they're concerned. And of course, the Green Lantern Corps can't let that happen, but they're outnumbered like thousands. There's thousands of Dark Stars, you know. So they're probably outnumbered, you know, 500-1, let's say, if not more. So they're going to have to recruit help from wherever they can get it. And I've said before that I think that the Robert Venditti run of Green Lantern will stand the test of time. If you listen to our recent interview with Rob about Hawkman, he talked about his desire to tell long form stories kind of in 25 issue chunks. And so we're coming up to the end of the second 25 issue chunk of his run, and from Rob himself, he feels like his understanding of Green Lantern, his ability to tell a good story in this corner of the DC universe has vastly improved since he first took over for Geoff Johns. To hear him say it, he didn't know what he was doing when he first took over, and it's gotten so much better since then. I don't know that I'd necessarily agree with that. I think he had a lot of good ideas right from the start, and it was enjoyable, but it has gotten better. It's leaps and bounds over what it was originally. And I think if you were a big fan of the Geoff Johns run and then didn't like what Robert Venditti was doing and left the title, or never even checked out what Venditti was doing and just left because Geoff Johns left, do yourself a favor and pick up this last story arc, because I think you'll really, really enjoy it. There's a lot happening here, and it's the culmination of Rob's 50-issue run, and he's going to tie up a lot of the loose ends, a lot of things that have been going on, and really put a stamp on his run. So really, really encourage you to go and check it out. So as I said, those are the only two titles I'm going to talk about in this episode, because we talked for over an hour about these two titles and others. And as I said, I apologize again for those being lost to the ether, so to speak. So I will give a rundown of some of the other titles you should be on the lookout for today. Baby Teeth number 10 from Aftershock. And I actually did a Baby Tooth spotlight on this last Monday's Aftershock Monday. So if you want to know more about Baby Teeth, which is kind of a take on a story that's been told before, basically a teenage mother births the Antichrist. And that's by Donny Cates. It's been a very enjoyable read. Next up, I will mention from DC Comics, we have Batman and the Signal number 3 of 3, wrapping up that story of Duke Thomas. Detective Comics 979 continues the story of James Tynan's Batman Family Army. There's a lot of tension going on there. I know Batwoman and Batwing and I think Azrael have joined the colony. They've joined forces with Kate Kane's father. So that's all coming to a head soon as James Tynan wraps up his run on Detective Comics. Also, from DC, we have Hellblazer number 21 from Tim Seeley. And I want to mention that because it's one of Nick's favorite titles. It's one of the books that he talked about. And I'm sure he'll talk about the next issue since he didn't get to talk about it, or you guys didn't get to hear it. He got to talk about it, but you guys didn't get to hear it. So I'm sure he'll be talking about the next issue of that. Also from DC, Silencer number 4 and Terrifics number 3, a couple of the New Age of Heroes titles that spun out of DC Comics Metal. They both come out tomorrow. Over at IDW, Sonic the Hedgehog number 4 continues on its weekly release schedule, I guess. I don't know how long they're going to be able to keep that up, but yeah, for now it seems like it's on a weekly schedule. From Image Comics, Cyberforce number 2. You heard us talk real briefly about that before it got cut off, and I do want to mention that tomorrow's episode, we talk to Brian Edward Hill, one of the writers of Cyberforce, and get into some of the big ideas of what the reimagining of Cyberforce is all about. We also have a Lazarus Sourcebook Collection, Volume 1 trade paperback. If you want to get into the world of Lazarus from Greg Rucka and Michael Lark, that's a great place to learn all about that world. From Marvel, we've got Avengers 690, continuing the weekly No Surrender storyline. Also from Marvel, their next big event, Hunt for Wolverine number 1 from writer Charles Soule. I think the art on that is by Steve McNiven, comes out tomorrow. Keep in mind that is a $5.99 cover price. Also, Invincible Iron Man continues its march towards number 600 with $5.99 out tomorrow. And there's the next issue, or the next, I guess not the next issue, but because the Thanos storyline that Donny Cates had been writing has wrapped up, but he's got a – Thanos has a new story coming out tomorrow in Thanos Annual number one. So if you were reading Donny Cates' take on Thanos and having a lot of fun, you definitely want to pick up Thanos Annual number one tomorrow. One of the things interesting about annuals is sometimes they're really important to the main narrative story going on and sometimes not so much, but they are typically very much under ordered compared to the regular series. And that Thanos title has been really hot. I mean, just looking tomorrow, there's like a fourth printing of 13 and 14 coming out and a second printing of 17 and 18 coming out. So if that's something you've been enjoying, you definitely want to pick up that annual because I imagine that's one that's ultimately got under-ordered. And finally, I'll mention from Valiant, Shadow Man number 2 and Exo Manowar number 14 come out tomorrow as well. So that's going to do it for this episode of the Comic Source for New Comics Wednesday for comics coming out April 25th, 2018. Again, not to sound like a broken record, but really apologize. Nobody's more disappointed than me that you guys didn't get to hear the episode as we intended it. We actually, once we realized what happened, Nick and I have a plan going forward to prevent these kind of situations in the future. Based on what happened, I think it's a good plan. And regardless of any kind of technical difficulty, there will always be a recording, even if it's not the greatest quality. There will always be a recording that we can release after we clean up the audio. So hope you all aren't too disappointed. Hope you get out there and pick up some of the books that we mentioned. And as always, thanks for listening. Don't forget you can go to thecomicsourceblog.com for all past episodes of the podcast. Twitter.com/thecomicsource is where we can be found on Twitter. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to keep up to date with all the episode releases and our convention coverage. While you're over at LRMonline.com, don't forget to check out all our other coverage there for TVs, movies, video games, all that kind of great pop culture goodness. So thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.